So, Brenda, I'm really curious about the future of food waste and yard waste in Maryland. Tell me a little bit about what the future holds.
Well, I think the future is bright for recovering food scraps and yard trimmings in Maryland. Maryland issued a zero waste plan more than a year ago, and recovering organic material is one of the core objectives of the plan, and it calls for a 90% recycling of food scraps and yard trimmings by the year 2040. It's very aspirational, and Maryland is, you know, on its way to meeting some of those goals, but there's really a long way to go, particularly with food scraps.
That's great. And that voice you're hearing, that's Brenda Platt, the co-director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance and the director of the Composting for Community program at ILSR. And I should have said, the award-winning Brenda Platt. This is Chris Mitchell. I'm back in the host chair. I usually do our broadband type work at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and I'm running the Building Local Power podcast again this week. And we're talking about composting in Maryland and how it's building local power. And Brenda, as we start, let me just ask you to just tell people, what award did you win?
The U.S. Composting Council, which is a national trade industry association, has several awards. And this year, I'm the winner of the H. Clark Gregory Award. That's an award that's given to an individual displaying outstanding service to the U.S. composting industry over a period of years, and in particular recognizes individuals who've had a lasting positive impact on the industry, particularly for grassroots efforts such as backyard composting and public education. So it's always an honor to be, you know, recognized by your colleagues and peers.
Well, I think it's well deserved from everything I've heard. I've talked with some of the people that you work with, and they always hold you in very high esteem. I think one of the reasons for that, it may have to do with you working so hard to get Maryland to pass this zero waste plan. And I wonder if we might just start, you know, you've been with the Institute for forever, and from my point of view, as I've only been here for 10 years. Can you just tell me a little bit about, just a minute or two, when you started at ILSR, what kind of recycling there was and whether there's a sense that zero waste was even a possibility? And then we can just fast forward to what Maryland's doing now.
Well, I started at the Institute in 1986, and zero waste was not even part of the lexicon. We were part of a larger movement, you could say, in the mid-90s to promote zero waste planning. And, you know, I'll just say, a lot of people, when I mention zero waste, their kind of eyes roll. They go, zero waste. Yeah, right, Brenda. But, you know, it's really akin to, like, manufacturers having a goal of, like, zero defects in their products, you know, or a community that has a goal of zero drugs in their community or schools. So we like to say, if you're not for zero waste, you know, how much are you for? So it's really a planning construct. It's a goal. There's interim goals along the way. And composting and food waste and yard waste recycling is really a very strong part of any community's zero waste plan or goal. I would just tell you that the leaders in zero waste planning and meeting goals is the business community. There's a Zero Waste Business Alliance, and there's, you know, dozens of businesses that have embraced zero waste planning and are saving money in their bottom line. And the international definition of zero waste is 90% or better. So it's not really zero in terms of the consensus definition. But there are a number of communities from Austin, Texas, to San Francisco, to small communities in between that have embraced zero waste planning. And it's been really a pleasure to be working on a sector, and particularly on composting, you know, an issue that addresses so many of the pressing issues of the day, not just trash reduction, but creating jobs, being, you know, meeting climate protection goals, composting in particular, because composting is a process that manufactures a product. It's a soil amendment. It ends up back in soil. And guess what? When it's in soil, it sequesters carbon. So there's so many benefits to moving towards zero waste planning and having composting be part of that, the strategy towards that.
Well, one of the things that I think people hear when you say zero waste, at least I'm just going to imagine this because this is what pops in my head, is I think plastic being wasted and thrown away. But it's interesting because you know things like leaves and its impact on the watershed. And you know, we're talking about communities that are environmentally sustainable and even food security. So maybe you just walk us through just a little bit as to this isn't just about having pretty gardens. This is much deeper in terms of how healthy a community is.
Right. And I'm with you on plastics. One of my pet peeves is styrofoam and single-use, you know, food serviceware items. So part of getting to zero waste is moving towards, you know, reducing waste, using more durables and reusables. And we're seeing a lot of that. Just take the plastic shopping bag, you know, which there's many communities that have either outright banned it or put a fee on it. And, you know, people are using reusable shopping bags. So we're seeing a culture change along with those critical policies. Now, when it comes to composting, it's true. It's not just only about using compost in your gardens to, you know, grow flowers or plants. One of the biggest growing markets for compost in the country is in what we call green infrastructure. And those are things like rooftop bioswales, rain gardens, green roofs, all of those green infrastructures that are designed to handle stormwater runoff from parking lots or hard surface areas. The old way used to be to build concrete canals or collect it. And when you have green infrastructure, which mimics the natural environment, it acts more like a sieve, if you will. So it filters the stormwater. It holds the stormwater. It slows it down. You've got native species that are growing in it that can handle the water. Compost in particular, which is really organic matter, has something called humus in it, which is like a glue-like substance that holds not only the compost together, but the soil particles together. So when you add compost organic matter to a rain garden or even your turf grass, your lawns, you're helping your lawns and those other landscaped areas actually like absorb the water. Studies show that you need 10% less water when you have compost soil amended with compost. So it can be tremendous savings on water, nutrients, slowing stormwater, sequestering carbon. And so we are now been doing a lot of work on showing that not only can you save money on communities by doing river smart landscapes, or in Montgomery County, Maryland, which is the largest population in Maryland, they have a program called the Rainscapes Program. You can actually get a rebate up to $750 if you put in a conservation landscape or a rain garden that's using compost. And if you're a private business or institution like a church or an office building, your rebate could be $10,000. So, you know, there are communities that are building incentives to trying to encourage people to add compost to your soils.
And we talked quite a bit about some of the work that the Institute for Local Self-Reliance is doing with the Neighborhood Soil Rebuilders Program, past episode with Linda, your colleague there in the program. But, you know, one of the things I just can't help but think about is that this seems like a whole new industry that's taking root and growing. And it actually is similar to more than 40 years ago when ILSR was formed. The solar industry was just kind of being born. And if you look today, I think it's unfortunate, but a lot of the benefits of manufacturing solar panels and things like that are in other countries. It seems like your work is trying to figure out how to make sure that as this composting industry develops, that we keep the benefits local to the communities.
That's right. One of the beauties of composting is that it can be small scale and large scale and everything in between. But what we're finding is that many cities that are rolling out their food scrap collection programs, making it convenient for citizens to participate by giving them a bin, collecting it every week, just like we've done in the last 20 years with recyclables being collected at households. But we're seeing that often those materials are going to a faraway facility. So the finished compost isn't making its way back to the community, to, you know, households that have set their food scraps at the curb. And one of the things that we've been promoting is that communities could be supporting small-scale, decentralized, distributed infrastructure. There's local farmers that could be supported. There's urban farms, you know, in addition to rural farms, there's urban farms, there's community gardens, there's composting at schools. And this is the intersection with the Neighborhood Soil Rebuilders Community Composting Training Program we've launched, is that small-scale sites will only be successful if they have trained operators. It's not rocket science, but there is some science and, you know, things you need to know in order to produce high quality compost, in order to avoid, you know, the pitfalls of unwanted critters running around at your site. And there are best management practices around that. You want to make sure that you're reaching high temperatures that can deal with any pathogens that might be in there. We are dealing with rotting food waste. And actually what we teach is you want to be using fresh feedstocks before it actually gets to that rotting phase. So through the training program, we're producing kind of a new generation of community leaders who understand the benefits of composting, how to do it, that are leading to small-scale decentralized sites being successful. And we've launched the program in the D.C. area already. I mean, we have a number of community compost sites, not only at urban farms and community gardens. We've got some at schools, and we've got, it's been replicated in Atlanta. They have one of their projects that started up from one of their trainees is at a church in addition to schools and inner city community farms and gardens. So it's helping make these sites very successful.
Well, I want to just touch on some of the things you're recommending that Maryland do. You've long worked in Maryland, and I think there's a couple of things you'd recommend that states be considering. So tell us a little bit about what a state can do to allow more of this composting at a local level.
We've been working in Maryland for a number of years, if you've noted. Well, it does help to work with state legislatures that you have a good relationship with. And so we were invited to work with, at the time, Delegate Heather Mazur, representative, and she introduced a bill that passed that called on the state agencies to relook at their composting regulations and permitting. So without that state bill that basically called on the state agencies to take a look at where they were and where they needed to be and to do the outreach and education, I don't think things would have moved. So in this particular state, that was critical. But then it really led to the state agencies, but not only the Maryland Department of Environment, but also the Maryland Department of Agriculture, with the other stakeholders, collectors, composters, environmental groups like ours, coming together and identifying that we needed to update the permitting regs. So without a clear regulatory path in Maryland, we weren't going to see, you know, investors or the private sector build facilities because it was such a gray area. So that actually was a process that took 3 years. And we worked hard to make sure that there were policies that supported on-farm composting, medium scale. We worked hard to make sure there were clear exemptions for small-scale sites. We have then followed up with that, as we were just talking about, with programs to help ensure that those small-scale sites that are exempt are still well operated.
What are some of the issues that you're working on in Maryland now?
See, some of the things that were kind of left on the table as a follow-up to the update on the permitting regs, which became finalized in the middle of 2015, is really now, what are we going to do to create incentives? What are we going to do to deal with zoning issues, identify properties? So there's still, in Maryland, a lack of facilities at all scales that can take food waste. There's generally no problem with yard waste, but there's still more yard waste that could be recovered. So we have a bill that we've been working with a group of stakeholders in Maryland actually had a Senate hearing last week in the House. A hearing on the Maryland House side will be February 8th. That bill, Bill 171, really is a calls for the Maryland Department of Environment to have a work group with other stakeholders to look at how it can expand the infrastructure for food waste and yard waste recovery. And it calls for very specific things in the bill. So they have to look at things like identifying sites. How do we create a grant and loan program to encourage infrastructure?
Do you think that bill is going to pass?
Right now, the bill is unopposed, so my fingers and toes are crossed that it will pass, and we'll continue to move the ball on advancing composting in the state.
Let me ask you a concluding question to you can certainly answer it however you'd like, but I'm curious, what's a really exciting development in composting that just makes you feel like this is a great moment?
Having just been at the U.S. Composting Council's conference and international trade show where I received the award we talked about earlier, we brought together the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. We had a big best practices in community composting workshop and several sessions on cultivating community composting. And we brought close to 70 community composters from all around the country to that meeting. We raised money for scholarships. So we had people from Flint, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, Atlanta, Baltimore, Los Angeles, D.C., Reno, Nevada, Cleveland. And they are young, they are mixed age, they are diverse, and they are the fastest growing movement of the industry right now. And it is just so exciting to be at the table with them. They are bike-powered food scrap collectors. Some of them are volunteer operations, but many of them are for-profits, and some of them are worker-owned cooperatives. One of them, like Ciro, a worker-owned cooperative out of Boston, is owned by predominantly Latino and African-American workers who were either underemployed or unemployed, who saw that this was a growing sector. Massachusetts, with the state policy, there was going to be more food waste recovery, and they said, you know what, we're going to get a piece of this pie. And so they're growing, and many of them are doing it on a community scale where those community assets, food waste and yard trimmings, the benefits, the workforce skills are all kept within the local community and to support not only the local economy, but, you know, the public health and other benefits of those communities. And it's just really exciting to see this small scale kind of community composting sector grow and be recognized within the larger composting industry.
That's really good to hear. Let me ask you then for a reading recommendation that also inspires you that you share with our audience.
One of the things that we've done recently is that we've launched a hierarchy to reduce food waste and grow community that looks at putting a lens on the scale and who owns the composting infrastructure. And that's available on our website. So please Google that. And we'd love your feedback on whether we're on the right track here, like rescuing edible food and then promoting home composting and small scale decentralized composting. And a companion piece to that, I'll just point out, is a report, Growing Local Fertility, a Guide to Community Composting. And that's also available on our website. And there's links to other resources as well. So check them out.
Great. And that's available at ilsr.org/initiatives/composting. Or you can certainly search for Waste to Wealth Composting. I think that's going to be one of the easiest ways to get you to the site. But we'll also have links on the webpage that has this podcast. Let me just thank you, Brenda, for coming on Building Local Power and sharing with us some of your insights about composting, where it's been, where it's going.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Brenda Platt visiting with Christopher Mitchell. She's one of our co-directors here at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and she also directs the Composting for Community program. Christopher is director of the Institute's Community Broadband Networks Initiative. For episode number 11 of the Building Local Power podcast, Brenda and Christopher were discussing composting programs, especially in Maryland, and how they can help build local power. Check out the resources Brenda recommended at ilsr.org and be sure to investigate more composting resources through our Waste to Wealth library.
Hey folks, I just wanted to ask you if you could do us a real big favor to help us spread this show around. And that's to jump on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you found this show, and to give us a rating, give us a little review, particularly if you like it. If you don't like it so much, then maybe don't do that. But if you're enjoying the show, please give us a rating and help us to build the audience a bit. Thanks.
We encourage you to subscribe to this podcast and all of the other podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Never miss out on our original research by also subscribing to our monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. Thanks to Dysfunction Al for the music licensed through Creative Commons. The song is Funk Interlude. This is Lisa Gonzalez from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Thanks again for listening to the Building Local Power podcast.